Help us, Google Fiber. You're our only hope. Episode 125 of the Frilla Bros Tech Podcast.
What do we want to do? Let's do this. Big announcement.
Let's do, can we do the big one?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
The timing is good from a cut standpoint.
Perfect. And actually, this is one I want to talk about. So,
all right, let's do it.
It's kind of a big deal. Okay, this is a big deal. I'm gonna cut off the legs of this conversation before we even get started. That I have no expectation that this will get cleared by the SEC or whoever makes these decisions.
SEC or something.
Who makes decisions on antitrust stuff with telecoms? I don't even know.
It's going to be
Who said AT&T can't buy T-Mobile? Thank you, by the way. I really appreciate it. Somebody who's getting ready to jump over to T-Mobile.
Man, where is it? This article doesn't actually say. I don't know. It's one of those guys. Regulators. Just go random, you know, or general.
There we go. So American regulators, I have no expectation that they'll let Comcast buy Time Warner. But Comcast is going to buy Time Warner. So on Wednesday, it leaked that they were going to announce that they were going to buy it. And then on Thursday, they announced we're going to buy them. It is a $45 billion customer. But it will bring 30 million customers. Did I say a deal? It's a $45 billion deal that will bring 30 million customers under one leaky roof.
Yay!
Yay for the free market.
Scales of economy.
Yeah.
It is the FCC, by the way.
Is it? Okay.
And the Justice Department.
Yeah, that's the JD, man. Those are my boys. They're gonna back me up.
But they're pretty sure they're going to let it go.
Really? Why did they say that?
Three big reasons. one of them you'll just roll your eyes at. First one, this is not that one, is that it's only a $44 million deal. It's really not that big in the grand scheme of things.
Okay.
I mean, it's big, don't get me wrong, but it's not like – it's not ginormous.
Right.
So there's the one. Two, oh, I love it. Comcast and Time Warner have actually done a pretty good job of carving up the United States, so there actually is very little, if any, overlap between the two. If you have Comcast, you probably do not have an option for Time Warner cable. And so they're like, so you still only have one choice. It doesn't actually change a competitive landscape. And number three, the one where you roll your eyes at, both Comcast and Time Warner have a ginormous, huge lobbying presence there. And the Comcast, one of their board of directors guys, is the former head of the FCC. So I knew you'd roll your eyes to that one. So they're like, yeah, it's going to go through.
That's super annoying. I love the fact that...
So, I mean, obviously, you know, the dance has to happen, of course. And they said, and plus Comcast can do certain things. They can play the games where they say, hey, in anticipation of this deal, we were able to lower everybody's prices by 5% because we were able to take advantage of economies of scale. You're welcome, America. So it's going to happen. I mean, I'm fairly certain I'll be shocked, let me put it that way, if it doesn't go through.
That's not what I wanted to hear, James.
I know. I'm sorry. But I said it and you went, dang it, he's right. Ah,
I'm like super depressed now.
You know, it's funny. So I have talked about it and I just haven't done it yet because I've been super busy and now's not a great time to do it. Of course, I don't know when it is a great time to switch internet providers, but I haven't, and I've been thinking about switching over to Comcast because they are faster and probably going to guess a little bit more reliable, blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of like, after reading this, I'm like, man, do I want to?
Yeah, all you have to do is give up customer service.
Well, if I were being honest, that's not giving up much. I'll say it. I'm with CenturyLink. They're bad. They're not fantastic. I don't know how you do it well, honestly, but.
Well, okay. I mean, you know, I hate to be, you know, that guy, but, you know, letting companies compete in the free market is not a terrible way to allow competition to, you know, drive service up and prices down. But, you know, when you've got.
I'm with you, man. There really isn't competition to begin with. And so to paraphrase a great galactic princess, Google Fiber, you're our only hope.
Yeah, I know. It drives me nuts because it's, you know,
And it was interesting. I was reading this article by Om Malik of Giga Om. He founded it, which is why his name's in it, which is kind of cool.
You know what I love about Giga Om, James? Is it literally every time you bring up a Giga Om article, you explain that.
I know. That's because I just think it's that awesome.
I know. That's what I like about it. Go for it, man. That's right. This is the last time I'll bring it up and make it awkward.
Nah. You can do it more. It's okay. His whole thing, he goes, look, this isn't about cable. Don't even think so. He was showing some revenue numbers about, you know, the triple play between cable, internet, and telephone.
Yeah.
And so he was saying that voice revenues are, you know,
going up.
Go up by $6 billion, you know.
That's a lot.
Comcast's voice revenues, you know, they're taking on an additional $6 billion. Does that make sense?
Seems worth it. $45 billion over, you know, divided by six.
Yeah, sure.
It's not too bad. It's like 8 years.
They were saying that – I got to make sure I'm getting my numbers right here. Broadband – yeah, am I doing this right?
Oh.
Yeah, I know. The broadband will go up about $17 billion for Comcast. And then I can't even remember where the cable one was. But it wasn't very much. And he was showing some charts that were showing the growth of those. And surprise, surprise, phone is going down, you know, they're not gaining a lot of subscribers. As a matter of fact, they're losing more than they're gaining, which it makes sense to me intuitively. You look at the cable, it is flattened out.
Yeah.
And then you look at, you know, broadband, and that's just rock to the moon type stuff. Big steady growth. And so their whole thing was like, you know, don't worry about cable. That's not a big deal. We'll, you know, we've got ways to get around that.
Right.
You know, to cut the cord. They're like, but unfortunately, you got to keep the broadband cord going in order to, you know, get rid of cable. And they're like, and that's their play. And they want to be a huge player there. And by getting control now, they can control that pipe. They can do some net neutrality stuff. They can implement data caps. They can, like you said, get rid of that competition so that you know, they can dictate how people will use it. And already infuriating, they were comparing speeds and prices to other countries around the world, and we are significantly slower and significantly more expensive than anyone else. And that's just the way it is, and it will probably only get worse now.
Yeah, and it just is, you know, it's just super crazy because – you know, what drives me nuts is the fact that it's like, so one of the articles that I was reading is basically like talking about why this is terrible news and who's this bad news for? And one of the things that's like indisputable, it's demonstrably true, is that Comcast is throttling Netflix and Apple data. You know, if you've got an Apple TV, and this is specifically true for me, we use Comcast, and every once in a while, I can tell that the network is heavy, and they're punishing me because I have an Apple TV, and I'm watching Netflix on it. It's just like, it's indisputable. You know, my internet's dragging down because I'm streaming Netflix on my Apple TV, and they know what that signal looks like, and they look for it, and they throttle it. And it's just like, I hate you so much. so much. And the worst part is that Netflix and Apple get blamed for it a lot of times. Just like Google gets blamed when, you know, when it takes forever for YouTube to buffer. Now, there are some things that Google is doing with the YouTube player that's absolutely their fault and just, you know, in a pathetic disregard for the product that they're serving up to people, specifically when you scroll around and it, you know, if you go backwards in time on your player and it forgets everything that's already loaded, it just drives me. What's the point of buffering if you're not going to remember what you already buffered? But you know, the reality of it is that, like, you know, slow buffering's not necessarily their fault at all. A lot of that is just, you know, they're looking for that data and they're, you know, they're jumping on it. And this is, you know, it's only going to get worse because this is what it's all about. Like you said, it's about controlling the pipes. And, you know, and it's funny, like, I, you know, obviously with, like, Verizon a couple of weeks ago, you know, they did that lawsuit and they tried to, you know, knock down the whole net neutrality thing, and by and large were successful. And the courts, the reason why they said the reason why the courts sided with Verizon is because they said there's legitimately competition. If you don't like Verizon, you can go with AT&T or T-Mobile or Sprint or Metro PCS or, you know, Straight Talk. There are other options for your service. There's, you know, you can't say it's anti-competitive and they have a monopoly if they're not being anti-competitive and they don't have a monopoly, which to everybody's response was like, well, that's ridiculous. Like, you know, they're clearly, you know, messing with us and colluding. Can't that be enough? Like, and
I can't remember if you shared this article. If I did, I actually don't remember reading it, so it was probably you. But they had a conference call when they were, you know, when they were announcing it. And David Cohen, who's an executive there, he gave this quote where they were like, which just sums it up exactly.
Yeah.
They were asking about whether or not, you know, this would lead to some relief for customers who are tired of seeing their monthly bills continually going upward. He goes, the impact on customer bills is always hard to quantify.
Yeah.
We're certainly not promising that customer bills are going to go down or even increase less rapidly.
You know, which is just, I mean, and that's like.
And they're like, could you, like you were talking about, could you imagine if AT&T had said that? Oh, my gosh. That would be.
When you put
competition.
Right, and when you actually put it in contrast, you feel like we all feel like we're getting raked over the coals with Verizon and AT&T because you can't really – you don't feel like you have a choice. And then when you put it in contrast to what's going on with Comcast, Time Warner, you're like, wow, okay, you know what? I'm actually – they took a lot of my hatred for AT&T went down a few notches. Now, my love for T-Mobile went up a few notches. But, you know, I grass always grew on the other side of the fence, you know, that sort of thing. And that's what I'm saying. You keep that green grass for me, T-Mobile. I'll be there soon. But
so here's the question. Here's the question, Matthew.
Yeah. Okay.
I realize that what we do right now is super important, but I would argue that it is not a utility yet. So the question is, how do we create a utility that everybody needs and we're the only ones who can give it? Because that seems to be a pretty cool place to be. I'll be honest.
I'll be totally honest, James. I spend an hour forcing myself to think about that regularly. I'd say at least once a month, I will force myself to just walk around and try to think of what is the next utility. Because what is the next product that you can sell to people that will become indispensable? Because I would love to become a public, I'd love to build a company that delivers a public utility and become highly regulated, because they're all stupid rich and they're hated and they're despised and just stupid rich. You know, and you know, power companies, you know, gas, and you know, gas companies, water companies, public utilities, man, that is the place to be. If you can get there and you can destroy all competition, legalize regulated monopolies are a beautiful thing, man, if you can be on top of it. And I don't know. I would gladly say it on this show if I could come up conceivably with one thing that I could say would be, this is definitely a public utility. This would be one day we can make this a public utility. And to me, it's funny. I think clearly what's going on is, you know, these companies are becoming public utilities, all of them, and they need to be regulated was, you know, it's a pretty rough shot. Because the problem is that, you know, this whole net neutrality thing is, it's interesting. Some of my favorite political thinkers, I agree with them on literally every point. And then we start talking about the internet, and it's just like, you guys are clearly morons. Like, what the heck is wrong with you people? Like, you know, it's just, you know, and it's funny, like, Supreme Court lawyers drive me nuts, because the Supreme Court lawyers that I listen to, that I read, that I love, and I agree with them on everything. And then you hear them talk about the internet, and it's just like, what is wrong with you people? Like, you know, and let me just, like, you know, and you know, not to get
do
into
you have an example? Because I mean, I just don't.
Yeah. So, you know, we don't talk about politics too much on the show, and hopefully revealing a little bit of my politics won't make anybody, you know, decide to walk away from it. But Tim Sandiford of the Pacific Legal Foundation is a guy that I think is great. He gets interviewed a lot in one of my favorite talk shows, and I've read one of his books. He's just a huge, like, individual rights advocate, and for the purpose of financial betterment. It's like he fights the EPA, you know, in the Supreme Court, in order to protect people, like, from getting deprived of everything they've owned and worked for, because the EPA is just writing, like, crazy legislation all over the place. And, you know, he's a big advocate for fighting for the little guy's ability to prosper. You know, and obviously, you know, if the EPA's, you know, if they're legitimately poisoning the environment, he doesn't protect them. He protects people who, like, aren't doing anything crazy. It's just, they're just running roughshod of overregulation by the EPA. And the EPA is coming down with, you know, million, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of fines and taking your house.
All right.
So, you know, this is the kind of guy.
Really, just care about the internet part.
I gotta say,
what does he say about that?
So this is the guy that's coming, and then his like response to it is like, you know, to the internet is basically saying, like, no, like, this whole net neutrality thing where the government's getting involved in regulating these companies and telling them that they're not allowed to sell to who they want when they want, that's how you destroy competition, that's how you drive up prices, that's how you ruin prosperity. And I'm like, what? are you serious? Are you not watching what these companies are doing? They're clearly colluding and working, like, against us. Like, they're anytime they've been given money, like, when you look at, you know, government has given them money to build better fiber optic cable, you know, networks and stuff, better telecommunications to improve our overall broadband, and nothing came of it other than the enrichment of these, like, of these CEOs. And there's nothing you could do about it because you don't have any options. They've got legalized monopolies all over the place, and they abuse us like crazy, and they collude behind doors. It's just like, at some point they become an electric, you know, but his opinion is that they're not a utility. They're, you know, if they're not a, yeah, you got to regulate, you know, power companies because they're a utility, but the internet's not a utility. So the best thing to do is to let competition, you know, competition will give the best, you know, results. And it's like, okay, as somebody who,
yeah,
like,
they're just not.
I know. Yeah, there's no competition. And like, you know, maybe it's just because I live in the Silicon Valley, but I don't know. It's important to my economy. It's a utility to me, you know.
So is there a way to increase competition?
I
you know, instead of going down the regulation route, can you say, okay, fine, you know, maybe we don't want to go there. Is there a way to increase competition?
I think what you got to do is you got to make it so that – I think what you have to do, honestly, is I think the right thing to do is to say that the person who owns the pipes cannot – you know, I don't know. It's like, okay, what's going on with T-Mobile right now is pretty cool, right? They build a few – access points, and then they buy all of the rest of their access from AT&T. So you get all the coverage that AT&T has, but, you know, just slower because they buy it wholesale. I think companies like Comcast, Time Warner need to be able, you know, have to charge fair market prices to sell it wholesale. And you got to give, you know, you got to make it so that all that if you own a cable, you got to let, you know, some podunk little whoever, you know, run on that cable just as fast as your data. And that means that you also have to, you got to treat the actual hard lines as though A, they're dumb pipes, and B, they're, you know, they're public utilities. And what that means is that, you know, yeah, they're going to get a small cut out of everything that they do, you know, and in order to upkeep the infrastructure.
Okay.
But, you know, but they want to own everything from from, they want to own everything from the content that's going on over it. They want to own the contracts because they want the vertical integration so that they can have a complete monopoly over content delivery, because then they can charge whatever they want and they make all the money. But if they have to charge, you know, if they have to give, you know, no precedence to their content, if they can't, you know, throttle Netflix and, you know, Furlough and Furlough Bros, you know, delivery system, you know, we're able to get the exact same price, you know, as Comcast, you know, and maybe even, you know, but, you know, we do something, I don't know, you know, we give a, if you watch the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, we give you a discount on your internet. We pay fair market prices to Comcast, but we get more users because, you know, we're charging less because we're subsidizing it with the Furlough Bro podcast and all the, you know, oodles of money we're making on this. All of a sudden, Furlough Bros is getting good content. We're happy. Comcast is happy. When I say you got to make a public utilities, that's what I mean. And it's, you know, and you know, that's what we do with the electric grid. If you're a power plant and you put money onto the, you know, onto the grid, you know, especially in California, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, you know, you basically deal with them. And it's really simple. If you have solar panels on your house and you make more power than you need, you put power onto the grid and PG&E pays you. They own the grid. They own the power distribution system and they make tons of money doing it. But yet you have an opportunity to put money out there. As an individual, you can buy power from specific sources. If you want to be green, you can buy money from green productions, you know, stuff. Now, granted, all you're doing is buying money from the open grid, or buying the power from the open grid, which means, you know, some of the electrons are coming from coal power, but all the money you're paying is going to green power sources, which effectively means over time, you know, more and more green companies become, you know, there's incentive. They're incentivized to build more power supply. And all they're doing is supplying to an open grid, and you're pulling from the open grid. But, and, you know, and Pacific Gas and Electric gets to make, you know, a little bit of money in between, which is fair. They upkeep the thing, but they're forced, they're legally forced to be fair about it. And there's absolutely no reason why the internet infrastructure can't work like that. I don't understand, you know, well, I do understand why it can't. It's because Comcast makes an unbelievable amount of money by not, you know, being treated like that. Where PG&E makes crazy money, Comcast makes, you know, just despicable money. because you know, they get to charge more. Oh, you want power from green? Well, that costs twice as much to make, and then we're going to charge twice as much on top of that because we don't like them. They're not us. So, you know, yeah, you can have them, but you're going to pay four times as much, you know, and they just make it, you know, prohibitive for anybody else to compete. And the worst part about it is it's what they're doing with the content. I don't know. I to me it just seems so clear. And then on the other side of it, and it's like the worst part is all their comments about how people don't want, you know, high speed internet. And you
what?
Got yeah, no,
who are
I know
these people?
I know exactly. This is the same week that Google is announcing that they're planning, they are promising to start delivering 10 gigabyte per second internet, which is,
I saw that,
literally 10,000 times faster than our parents' broadband, because they get 1 to 2 megs. It's just like, it's freaking nuts. You know, yeah, exactly. I mean, like, and that's, I mean, it's just like, that's insane. That's just insane. It's insane how fast the internet's going. And then on top of that, IBM Labs broke a speed record, or announced that they broke a speed record. They're talking about being able to get data speeds, low energy data transmission, up to 400 gigabytes per second. 400. I mean, and like, and you know, and that's up and down time. That's not just, I mean, it's just, it's crazy. All these leaps and bounds. We have pathetic internet compared to other countries in the world. And it's funny. I heard all of these different rationales and like engineering, like explanations for why our infrastructure cannot handle what other countries can handle. You know, everything from, you know, overall closeness to, you know, the backbone of our internet is XY. It's older technology because we built it earlier. They got to leapfrog us, so they got better this, they got better that. And it's funny, the more and more research I do, the more and more it becomes, you know, painfully obvious that any limitations that our infrastructure has, A, is by and large, it's not as bad as we are paying for. You know, it's the infrastructure is not as weak as they pretend it is in order to charge us more for less. And B, any weaknesses it does have should have been taken care of when we gave them billions and billions and billions of dollars to upgrade that infrastructure out of taxpayer money. You know, and you're like, and to enrich these companies, it drives me nuts. It absolutely drives me nuts. We're getting raked over the coals so bad on these with these companies, and you know, and they're regional monopolies. They're states, cities, and you know, counties that have you know basically you know, and the very fact that Time Warner and Comcast have virtually no overlap, they have virtually no competition, is just the two biggest companies. How does that not just inherently, you know, I don't know. I think what's going to happen, I think the FCC is finally getting their act together. I don't, you know, and this current administration has another 3 years. It's entirely possible that they'll actually get their act together enough to really enact some serious, you know, net neutrality stuff where they treat internet provision like it were data line provision. You know, on the flip side, though, that has, you know, this whole smart grid technology, the electrical smart grid is, you know, that's obviously where we need to go as a country. And we're not doing it because there's not a lot of money in it and there's not a lot of competition to push for it. Yeah. You know, and so it's you know, it's not like it's, you know, it's not like it's a perfect system by any means. But the current system is not working. You know, something needs to be done. Now, this is something that doesn't necessarily needs to be done, but something needs to be done because it's not working. It's just not working. You look anywhere else in the world, and when we're clearly getting beat, and it will hurt us as a country and as individuals.
Wow. You have an opinion on this.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. Obviously.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you cool off a little bit. Wow. Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll get lucky and it won't go through, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
Yeah, I'm going to say thanks for
crushing my hopes. And maybe I should start applying for some Comcast jobs, it sounds like, too.
Yeah, seriously. That's,
if I can't beat them, join them.
Mm-hmm. There's a part of me that wants, you know, there's a part of me that thinks like that, too.
But, yeah. Either that or figure out how do we do this over, you know, the T-Mobile network or something.
Yeah.
That's how we really stick to the man.
Yeah.
We're just really switching over to a different man. Okay. Let's see here. I want to learn about wireless power.
So this is pretty awesome. I'm a big fan of your wireless transmission. Obviously, if you listen to this show at all, I think battery technology is a big deal. And this week, some big things are happening. State of the technology, real quick. Basically, you know, most wireless power is like, you know, basically you got a little pad, you sit your phone on it, and it charges it. And it all works over essentially the same principle. What you do is you take a magnetic field. And they call it, there's strong magnetic coupling. You take a coil and it generates an alternating magnetic field. If you put another coil in that field, it starts causing electrons in its coil to start, you know, get all excited in a very similar path, you know, in a similar way without actually connecting the wires. So there's no physical touching. They're just magnetic fields, you know, moving together. This is actually how transformers work, which is why I'm going to Spain to replace one.
Those kind of transformers. Got it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I was like, wait, I don't get the connection, but I'm with you now.
Yeah. Electrical transformers. It's funny. Everybody I talk to is, you're going to go replace a transformer in Spain? That's awesome.
That's
not
so
as cool
amazing.
As it sounds. Yeah.
I hear you say.
It's cool. I think it's awesome.
I had to shop some of that stuff ahead of time. For when you're there,
yeah,
you know, you're just like working on a transformer. It's just like a big bumblebee cutout.
Exactly.
That'd be pretty funny.
That would be pretty funny.
A lot of people. But it'd be funny.
What I love about it is it's even like the like really non nerdy girls that never watch Transformers that are like, like the robots? No.
Yes, exactly. Actually, am I cooler now?
Exactly. No.
You find me attractive?
Well, the best part about it is I just love how pervasive that, you know, Transformers are in pop culture, that even the people that don't care about them care about them. So that type of power transmission allows you to cut the wires. It's pretty exciting. There's a really cool MIT demonstration. If you go watch a TED talk, there was a company that they figured out what they call weak magnetic coupling through magnetic resonance, which is effectively what they were saying is what you can do close up through strong magnetic coupling. You put one coil right next to the other coil. We can do over a long distance, which is like, you know, up to like 5-10 feet at this point. And we can power stuff way across. The thing is that essentially what happens is you have a transmitting antenna and a receiving antenna, and they have to be really, really fine tuned to each other in order to work. So everybody was coming out with their own way of doing it, because there's a lot of options. There are benefits and faults to all of them, but nobody was coming up with a standard. So effectively what you were having was a proliferation of different charging options. But it was like all the cables back in the day. Every phone had a different cable. They all do basically the same thing, but they all do it a little bit differently, so you have to buy their specific cable. And it was really kind of cutting the legs out from underneath the industry, because everybody had standardized on the really effective, easy USB, except Apple. And because everybody was standardizing, it's like, you know, who wants to go out and buy a pad that's not going to work for all their phones? Well, good news. Basically, these companies are realizing that that's the problem right now, really breaking into the market in a big way. And so they're all starting to agree on standards. So Qualcomm and Samsung joined forces to start the Alliance of Wireless Power, A4WP, one of many organizations competing to establish the universal standard for wireless charging. Obviously, Qualcomm and Samsung, big deals. Apple hasn't thrown their hat in openly with anybody, but it's pretty obvious that they're trying to. So this is huge. And they all kind of, you know, like your Samsung Galaxy's S's, and Qualcomm's in every phone. So they're really focusing on the strong magnetic coupling, the short range stuff. So you have one pad, you plug into the wall, you throw any device on it, your watch, your phone, whatever, automatically charges. It's rotation independent, or you can do all sorts of cool things. And more and more people are getting crazy with like what you do once you have a standard.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's very exciting for this kind of technology. But the big deal, and the reason I got super stoked, is because I've been waiting for this. Like, I decided about 6 months to a year ago that I thought that TED talk where they were talking about the long distance power transmission, there was something wrong that they weren't telling us, because I hadn't heard anything from them. Like, I literally hadn't heard anything from the company in forever. And they had always stated that they weren't going to sell, they weren't going to sell aftermarket stuff. They were going to sell their patents essentially directly to OEMs. But I hadn't heard anything about them until this week. And all of a sudden, in 2011, Y-Tricity announced a partnership that will see its contactless long field magnetic resonance used to power up Toyotas. This is 2011, obviously, with the new partnership plans to innovate on the incorporation A4WP's with this new specification. So basically, they've just agreed to, you know, throw in with A4WP, this Samsung and Qualcomm, cool, which is great news, because in my opinion, if their technology delivers on the promise that it is, it's the way everybody's going to have. But it requires some like real infrastructure changes, because like they build these, their antennas are larger, and you're going to have more of them in your house. But you can embed them in walls and charge entire rooms. Like, you just have your entire room become, you walk into the room and your phone starts charging. You know, and or your watch that you never take off your arm starts charging when you're home or in your bed. And they basically just blanket places with these, you know, these power chargers.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion, that's the way that it needs to go. And you're finally getting some real big dogs all together and agreeing, yeah, we're going to make this work. We're going to standardize on these technologies. And, cool. Yeah, it's super exciting. And then, we've yet to see a
real
life.
That's the kind of thing that, like, man, that'd be so cool. It would semi-solve the battery problem, which would be nice. I mean, like, imagine installing this in airports.
Yeah. Well, if it were like Wi-Fi, it would be like Wi-Fi. It would just would be McDaniels would build this into all of their tables so that you could just you're hungry? You need some free internet and some free power? Come on in. We'll help you out. You know, they already got wall outlets everywhere. Why not put these in everywhere? And if there's nothing in the field pulling down the power, they're not very inefficient. They're like a wall wart just plugged in. Yeah, they suck drain a little bit of energy, but it's not that big of a deal. These are things that companies that are already offering, and they're not huge expenses, additional expenses. Think about, oh my gosh, I mean, like, how much more annoying would Starbucks be if all you had to do is walk in with your, MacBook Air to work on your, manuscript, and you don't even need to bring your power, and you got internet and, power. You just sitting and you could sit there for days. that would be, sipping on your mochaccino. But that's where this goes. I mean, and if everybody
and it's,
is
and it's safe so far as I know. For
sure.
Humans to be exposed to it long term.
Dude, it is the safest putting a phone antenna up to your brain, which some argue is not safe. But it was one of those things where, people freak out about it, and it's entirely possible that this is, making water troughs out of lead pipes, aka a la ancient Rome. We're all slowly poisoning ourselves to death. It's possible, but a lot of people are studying it hardcore, and nobody's coming out with any concerns. It's magnetic radiation, which if you're freaked out about magnetic radiation, turn off all light everywhere, because guess what that is? It's just that that stuff can be really deadly in two forms, incredibly intense amounts of magnetic radiation and be highly tuned magnetic radiation, but we're particularly badly tuned for this type of magnetic radiation. So even at really high, energy levels, it's relatively ineffectual on us, which is comforting. Yeah. It's cool. It's really cool. It's really exciting. And I get stoked on this kind of stuff because, I think that this is clearly the future of power in America
The power. I like it. That's cool. The future. How far off is that future?
10 to 20 years. I think so CES this year was a big deal because some of these certifications are finally getting approved by other companies and any products. Realistically, I think within 2 to 5 years, you'll start to see consumer. I think Samsung is going to get on this bandwagon fast because they want everybody to buy Samsung charging stations, and just they want to rule that market. That they're very interested in that. Qualcomm doesn't want any. They're just doing gangbusters right now in the mobile wireless industry, and so they don't want someone like Intel or Texas Instruments to see an opening here and cut them off of the leg. So they're both very, 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 very interested in setting the standard and getting it out there in as many phones as quickly as possible. So I think realistically, in 2 to 5 years, it'll be really common for all non-iPhones to have some sort of a standard charging station where this stuff is built in. And it'll be interesting to see what Apple does, because this is the sort of thing where sometimes they strike out on their own and decide to be rebels, but sometimes they decide to, they realize where it's going and they jump on the bandwagon faster than anybody. And it just,
it'll partially depend if they think they've got a better solution or not.
Right. And I think, yeah. Yeah. I think the iWatch, you know, my gut is that they want that to be some sort of, I don't know, I keep thinking they want everything to be wireless power every time, and every time it's not. So I can't tell what their wireless battery ambitions are at all. Like, I'm so out of tune with them, it's not even funny on this point, because I think it's like the only thing that matters, and they're like, chillax, we're working on it. Like, come on, guys! Or not. You can't tell. That's the whole point.
Just stay tuned for great things. We got great products coming out.
I know, right? Jeez.
That's what Cook says every single time.
Every single time. I actually believe him this year, unlike last year, where I called out that they're coming out with the iWatch this year, just unquestionably. Sure. No. Have you seen the team that they've put together?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
A couple years to go, right?
No.
They're just putting the team together.
I've watched this enough times, okay?
I know. No, they're going to. He just says the exact same thing every single time.
It's super obnoxious. Yeah, you know,
anytime someone asks him for some sort of insight, he has none.
Yeah, I know. But, and it's not because he has none. It's just because he's, you know, loose lips sink ships, and he's a classically trained Jobsian.
Well, Jobs shared stuff. Jobs was a better discerner of what can I share and what can't I share. And
right, exactly.
He doesn't know, and so his default is nothing.
Right, exactly. Well, and oftentimes Steve Jobs would, like, you know, nobody reads anymore months before they launch iBooks. He had no qualms misdirecting, I think is the word that he would use. Lying. But, you know, and I say all this to say, because this is what drives me nuts. So the iWatch, you know, I'll jump ship. The team that they're putting together, they are putting together a hardcore team, yes. And everybody's talking about all the cool new stuff. They think that the iWatch is going to have what they call optoelectronics, which are basically just LEDs with LED sensors. But what's cool is if you blast LED into the skin, you can see what's going on in the blood. And so you can monitor things like oxygen level, levels in the blood. You can monitor heart rate and stuff. So basically have this thing on your wrist, and it'll give you all sorts of important vitals. Problem that I have with all of this.
The heart rate monitor is the last thing that I would like to have, and I don't.
Yeah, me too. That's a big selling point for me. My problem is that this is a classic Apple. They put together what they thought was essential hardware. Good battery life, looks beautiful, has a, you know, Bluetooth and a pedometer. And then once they had the product together and they really knew what they were going to do, then they hired all the experts on medical, you know, stuff and to start developing on the medical stuff. Problem is, the final design for the first generation is probably already relatively set.
Yep.
And so all this hiring they're doing is for the next generation the second generation of iWatch, which drives me nuts because it's going to come out. I'm going to want it crazy and know that it's only a quarter of what I want and that the next year's version is going to have everything I want. And you don't want to know what the worst part about all this is? I'm still going to buy it because I'm like just so stoked on it. Well, maybe not. If all it is is a really good looking Bluetooth pedometer, I'm not buying one. I like my Fitbit just fine. But that's not all it's going to be. It's going to have other cool.
It'll also tell time.
I don't know, right?
Watch. You'll be able to control your music. That'll be cool.
Yeah, but I am.
I know. I'm harassing you.
I know you are. It drives me crazy because it's, you know, there's a part of me that's like, yeah, that would be nice. I would like that.
It is nice.
Yeah,
I do like it.
I know. Yeah, jeez. Hey, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. It's way too difficult at this point to tell exactly what's going to be in it, other than it's going to be awesome and, you know, it's a medical device. That's so clearly what it is. I mean, there's a huge medical team, and it's exciting because it's like, you know, where Google's out hiring all sorts of like crazy, like, you know, deep learning experts and stuff and, you know, roboticists, and everybody's like, you know, look at all this, like, you know, innovation that's going on in Google with all the purchases and hirings they're making it. Like, that is true, but let's not like underestimate the team that, you know, Apple's putting together, and they're building one of the like greatest healthcare team, you know, medical device engineers that it, you know, is on planet Earth. And medical device engineers are generally relatively small teams. You only need, you know, like 30 engineers. They've got like a team of like 100 of some of the smartest, like, you know, most degreed guys. They are putting together a just tank of an engineering and scientist team to work on this product. They are very, very, very serious about it, and they want it to be, they want everybody to need one. And I think they're going to do all right in that capacity. But I'm excited to see what they come out with.
I can tell.
So speaking of
one putting more.
Together, oh geez, I get one more.
Choices.
I know. This one's cool. If you're not from the Silicon Valley, you probably don't care much. If you are, you probably already know. But I'm going to talk about it anyways because I think it's cool. So Moffett Field, you know the hangar at Moffett Field? This is like, especially for our family, this one's kind of a big deal because our grandfather worked for Lockheed Martin. A couple of our aunts and uncles worked for Lockheed Martin. And one of our cousins currently working for Lockheed Martin. So we got three generations of, they wanted me to work there so bad they couldn't stand it, or at least apply. And I was just like,
I applied for a couple jobs.
It's boring.
They didn't want me. You're lost, Lockheed. I hate you.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, right next door, one of the if you're coming up 101 on your way to San Francisco from Santa Clara, so you're like the heart of the Silicon Valley. Like this is what the Silicon Valley is all about. As you're coming up, you know, passing Lockheed Martin, there's this big old hangar that's just been there forever. It's an airship hangar. And it's right out in Moffett Field. It's gigantic. And
did they give you any like like how many football fields it is or anything like that?
I not in this article.
Okay. I'll look it up. You keep talking.
Yes, thank you. Because I was starting it. So basically, what happened was this gigantic hangar that they're building that they've had there forever. NASA uses it used the field for a long time. They don't use it that much anymore. It just kind of sits there. It's basically a private airport designed for military and government test stuff. Well, they haven't been doing anything with it. And if you're familiar with the area geographically, not only is Lockheed Martin's headquarters right there, but so is Google's, like right next door. They're basically down the street from each other. Facebook's a little bit higher north, Apple's a little bit lower south. They're all within a 15-minute drive from each other, which just weirds me out and is kind of amazing. The heart of the internet happens here. But the Google guys, because they're so close to Moffett Field, they're like, hey, NASA, mind if we park our planes there? So all their private, like, charter jets that they all the execs get because they're crazy, stupid, rich, they park there. They don't park it at. I am flying to Spain. I have to fly out of SFO like a plebeian. They park at Moffett Field with their like super awesome jets and stuff. Well, they've been using it more than NASA, like a lot more than NASA, and they've been paying tons to NASA. And they were like, "You mind if we just like I don't know, buy it from you?" And NASA was like, I don't think we can go that far, but you can lease it from us. Mm. So they've worked out a lease agreement where basically Google's taking over Moffett Field. NASA still gets to use it if they need it for any of their cool, you know, we're going to Mars testing. And they were like, and because, you know, the hangar at Moffett Field is part of the history of the Silicon Valley, of the Bay Area. Y'all got to keep it. And Google was like, of course we're going to keep it, man. We're going to restore it. So Google is, as part of their lease, have agreed to restore the hangar, which it's amazing because it's enormous, but it is old and decrepit. And there have been arguments about whether or not they should refurbish it or tear it down for the last two decades.
So this thing is so I got the stats on it.
Awesome.
It is 1,133 feet long by 308 feet wide. That translates into 6 football fields.
Woo!
I love it. Wikipedia actually used that as a as a descriptor to tell you how big it is. I was like, yes, it just makes sense. Those doors weigh about 500 tons.
Oh my gosh.
That's a lot. And they have 150 horsepower motors to
open them a couple inches at, you know, per minute. I mean, they're it was super slow. If you're on the Google right now, you're on your computer, use your internet connection and Google hangar at Moffett Field and just look at the pictures. This one.
The airship's hangar's interior is so large that fog sometimes forms near the ceiling.
Oh my gosh, it's awesome.
A person unaccustomed to its vastness is susceptible to optical disorientation. Looking across its deck, planes and tractors look like toys. Along its length, maintenance shops, inspection laboratories, and offices help keep the hangar busy. Looking up, there's a network of catwalks for access to all parts of the structure that can be seen. And there's two elevators, I guess, that meet at the top, allowing maintenance personnel to move. Yeah, that's pretty – it's not small. It's the largest in the world, by the way.
It's obvious when you drive by it. It's just – it's ridiculous. I've ever told you that my
– It's my dream... 60 – it's a – what is it? It's a – how tall is it? The shell claim doors. It doesn't say how tall it is. I wish it did. It's tall.
Yeah.
At least 10 feet tall.
At least at the very least. One of the things that
it looks taller than it is wide, and we know that it's 308 feet wide. My guess is it's probably like 300 to 350 feet tall.
Yeah, which is, you know, by the way, a football field.
There you go.
It's the thing is just ginormous. I love it. Have I ever told you that one of my dreams is I want to own a farm on the coast of California, just like one of like the cliff farms, like that looks over the Pacific Ocean. Beautiful. I want one of those so bad I can't stand. But the other thing that I want when I'm like super rich, I want to buy a hangar and like build a house inside the hangar and like build your own weather systems in it. So if you want rain, turn the rain on. If you want like sun, like it's obviously going to be an expensive project, but you can like build your own like eco dome inside of a hangar. Like it sounds so. I want it to be like giant tree forest type stuff, like all over the place. Like, you know, you just like build like have like trees grow in it and have stuff like hang from the ceiling, so like you can like walk up catwalks and like be over, you know, like over your house, and because you can build like full size giant houses inside hangars. And they are, you know, like dwarfed by the hangar. I mean, they're awesome. They're great structures. I love them. I'm gonna have to be really, really, really stupid rich in order to make this happen. But I'm working on that utility idea quick. Exactly. But
so if you figure out how to control the weather inside of that dome, you may be onto something already.
Good point.
I like it. That's pretty cool. That's cool. I mean,
I agree. I'm very excited about it, obviously.
Cool. I like it. Let's see here. Where are we at? Okay. So, hey, thanks for doing this Saturday morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you for doing it Saturday morning, because you're welcome. Spain.
So you're leaving today, coming back Tuesday?
Wednesday.
Wednesday. It was a Wednesday.
Yeah.
All right. That'll be good. You're going to work hard. Kind of a whirlwind. How long is the flight? How long is the flight? That's what
it's,
I want.
It's 12 hours to France, about an hour and a half from France to Bilbao. So total travel time is going to be probably 16 hours.
Well, that's not awesome, but that's not horrible either.
Honestly, I've done the layovers in Montreal and New York, and those are way worse because – it doesn't, the doing a direct, you know, slowing down, landing, doing the transfer and everything, like, adds so much time to it. But also, just, you get off of a 10-hour flight, and you get back onto a 10-hour flight, and it's awful.
Yeah.
It's all, that second leg, you're just like, I can't believe I'm doing this again. Please stop this. Can we just be done? Whereas, you know, Kevin, to get onto an hour and a half of, like, puddle jump across to, you know, a European border, eh, it's not bad. I can deal with that.
It's still kind of fun, because you're like, I'm in Europe.
Right, so. And I get the French stamp in my passport, which means technically there I've been go. To France, and then I'll have a bunch of pictures of me in Spain, which means I've technically been to Spain. So I get to add that one to my list as well, although it's kind of a stretch.
Yeah, that's a little bit. Yeah, I gotcha. What was I going to ask? I can't remember, but oh well. So that's cool, 16 hours of travel.
I don't know.
That's a lot.
I'll get there at 3 in the afternoon in Bilbao, Spain.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Get a couple hours of work done, you'll be good to go.
Well, since it'll be Sunday, I get the party, man.
Okay.
I gotta, and the best part about all this is my phone is officially unlocked, so I can buy a SIM card there for the 3 days I'll be there. I might do it just for the fun of it if it's not too expensive.
Right. That's sweet, man. That's cool.
Yeah, very cool. I'm very excited.
Yeah, that'll be good. All right. Well, I'm going to let you finish packing.
Thank you.
And I got stuff I'm doing, so there we go. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my what are you?
I went with Valentine Love Struck. Type. Yeah,
my
Cupid.
Love.
You go for it.
What would I call you?
Don't worry about it, James.
Spanish love struck brother is Matthew Furlow, and so we will talk next time. Thank you.